It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. It is Fantasy Feast with Ross Tucker, Evan Silva. Fantasy Feast episode 133, by the way, for those of you keeping track. RossTucker.com is always the hub for this bad boy. You can get the feeds for any way you listen to this. We got all those feeds at the top of the page to make sure you guys can access this however it is that you need to access it. Tuckheads.com is for the diehards that really have the sickness like Evan Silva and want to extend the conversation to continue the dialogue. And the RSO League continues to roll along. We will announce contestant number 6 a little bit later on in the show. You guys know what you need to do to have a shot. It's just the iTunes comments, the RossTucker.com newsletter, as well as a sponsor confirmation or two or more if you want to make sure you get one of the last 4 spots. Evan, going to change things up a little bit with today's guest. And this was kind of your idea, so I'll make you explain yourself.
Yeah, because Ross, I don't know if you agree with me, because you have to like come up with content and stuff to talk about every single day. That's one of the big things that you have to do. But I feel like it's been a really boring NFL offseason. How do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, there have definitely been some days where I felt like I really had to struggle to find a topic. You know, there's no Brett Favre or Deflategate or nothing major. You know, there weren't like the major trades like there were last year with Jimmy Graham and whatever. So, you know, there's still a lot going on in the NFL. It just always seems that's the case, but maybe not as much as last year.
For me, it started at the Combine, because that is always an event that I get excited for. And just, there weren't great stories coming out of the Combine. You know, nobody really, really ripped it up. You know, I think the draft is kind of bad. You know, the number one overall prospect, according to a lot of people that cover the draft, is Miles Jack. He's like a strong side linebacker with a knee injury. Another really touted guy is Joey Bosa. He had 5 sacks last year. I mean, I think he's going to be a good pro, but not super exciting, like a strong side defensive end. Jalen Ramsey, a safety cornerback tweener, a quarterback from North Dakota State. Like you mentioned, there's been no big scandals. The biggest trade, I guess, would be Chandler Jones to Arizona. The Texans made some splashes, but it's like, it's the Texans. You know, they signed Brock Osweiler. You know, free agency was okay, but it feels like it's been a really quiet off season. And so I wanted to bring someone in smart who knows a lot about football too, by the way. But I wanted to bring in somebody smart to talk about a topic that is exciting people right now. And we're going to ask them a few questions about Major League Baseball Daily Fantasy, and also get some thoughts on NFL Daily Fantasy as we kind of inch closer toward the season.
Yeah, I'm on board with it. I like it. I guess the only question I have, the only big news this week, fantasy football-wise, I guess, was Josh Gordon's, you know, reinstatement application was denied. He can reapply August 1st. I guess for someone, Evan, that's like in a dynasty league and has Josh Gordon, at this point, do you tell them to try to trade him for anything you can get in return, or is his value so low that you might be better off hanging on to him and seeing what happens after August 1st with this reinstatement?
It's a really tough situation. You know, I mean, I'm in a similar one. I own Martavis Bryant. And, I mean, I think if somebody came to me offering an early second-round pick in a rookie draft, which would essentially equate to maybe Kenneth Dixon, the running back coming out of Louisiana Tech, maybe not even him. But, you know, someone in that area, I mean, I think I'd seriously consider it, but I might ultimately not do it and just hope that this guy gets his act together and, you know, I can use him in 2017. With Josh Gordon, at least there is a slimmer, very small sliver of hope that he could play in 2016. So, yeah, I mean, I would try to hang tight. There will be a lot of people that will tell you to sell, and I understand that, you know, but it's just you're not going to be able to get great value for Josh Gordon or for Martavis Bryant right now. And I know that in a lot of dynasty leagues, at least that I play in, you can stick a guy on a list, you know, whether it be like the suspension or injured reserve list, and they won't count against your roster in 2016. And then you can reactivate them in 2017. But yeah, right now I'd probably just be holding and hoping.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I'm going to hold on the line like everybody on the podcast and hope that your boy Jonathan Bales is as good as advertised.
Big Eater of the Week.
Well, as we discussed, today's Big Eater is very versatile. And if you follow Evan on Twitter, like you should, at Evan Silva, he's a guy that Evan retweets quite a bit. At Bales Football, Bales Football on Twitter, does a terrific job. Now he's really focusing in on DFS and a bunch of different sports, but I'll let him tell you what he's doing right now. Jonathan, great to have you on the Fantasy Feast. Really appreciate your time. And if you've ever listened, my first question is always the same, which is, before we start getting your advice, for you to tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and kind of how you got where you are and what you are doing now, who you are working for.
Yeah. First, thanks for having me on. It's great to be on. So currently I run a few sites. One is Fantasy Labs, which helps DFS players build lineups and ultimately through the creation of models using advanced data and back testing those models to know what sort of things are predictive of DFS success and so they can create profitable lineups. I also have a site on RotoGrinders called Roto Academy, which is a DFS education. And I have a book series called Fantasy Sports for Smart People, which is sort of advanced DFS strategy. But in terms of how I got into fantasy sports and daily fantasy, I started in season long, and this was maybe, I believe, 2012. I was doing some work for an NFL team in analytics, and I was really interested in fantasy sports, mainly fantasy football. And so I just decided to write a book. I had no writing experience. It was really just for me, and I published it, and it was somewhat successful. And so that's really, I think, what prompted me to get into fantasy sports a bit more and just sort of go down this rabbit hole and then ultimately be pretty much full time into DFS.
That's awesome. And I guess the other question that I always have been asking people is just what can be done based on last year's season for you really moving forward? Like what are you going to look at based on last year that is going to affect, from an NFL standpoint, how you draft this year? What's your biggest takeaway?
Well, I think you're looking at everything. There's so many moving parts in the NFL that so much changes, but there's also a lot of things that stay the same. So things like red zone scoring rates, the same types of players are going to score. And so you're looking at that, which types of players can convert in the red zone. With teams that don't have coaching, still most of them, you're trying to break down the coaches because the coaches are so important. You could have really talented rookie, you could have really talented players, and the talent, especially at certain positions, like running back, maybe doesn't matter nearly as much as just the opportunities that they're going to get and the pieces that they have around them. And then I'm looking at specific stats and then how much they predict success in season long in regards to ADP, and then in daily fantasy in regards to both salary and ownership. So basically which things are priced in, because something could be super important in terms of predicting on-field success, but not really that valuable in fantasy if everyone else knows about it. So that's why I like to focus sort of on those niche sort of things, those stats maybe that people think are a little bit minor that are actually really, really valuable to you as a DFS player or a season-long owner, just because they're not priced into draft position or salary.
Got it. Like, can you give me an example or two?
I think the red zone stuff that I talked about is so important in every type of fantasy football, and I think that people still are undervaluing it. They're looking probably at past touchdowns too much and not as much at future scoring ability. I think even something like measurables for rookies, knowing which things are predictive. So the 40-yard dash matters, but it matters more for certain positions. I think it matters more for running backs, the 40-yard dash and the broad jump than people think. And I think that it matters maybe less for wide receivers than people think, and maybe something like size, which contributes to red zone scoring ability, matters more.
Got it. Well, you know, Evan may have another NFL question for you or two. We were talking earlier about how it's kind of been a slow, relatively speaking, offseason for the NFL. And I know a lot of our listeners, they play more than just fantasy football, and they play, you know, DFS baseball as well. So I'm going to let DFS baseball is not my thing. So I'm going to let Evan have at you a little bit. Go ahead, Evan.
Well, just to stay on the topic of NFL a little bit, I love that you hit on the notion of opportunity for running backs. As somebody who kind of covers the NFL year-round and, you know, watches the players in college and, you know, evaluates them, tries to evaluate them from a combine standpoint, listens to what other people say about the players, you know, you get somebody like Jeremy Langford, who was a fourth round pick in the draft. You know, I didn't particularly love him coming out of Michigan State. You know, it's week 7. He's getting a start against San Diego, the worst run defense in the league. And, like, I didn't have enough exposure to Jeremy Langford that week because I have all these preconceived biases about this player. You know, so, like, being able to narrow down or being able to understand, you know, that even if I'm right in my evaluation of Jeremy Langford and I don't love him as a long-term, you know, solution as an NFL running back, like I need to use him in that specific week. So are there any kind of biases that you develop, Bales, and that you have to kind of deal with regardless of which sport we're talking about?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, related to that, I think we spend so much time on evaluating players, whether it's film study or analytics or whatever it is, that we become just really confident in our ability to assess players. And maybe we are overconfident, but we just think that we know these things, and maybe we do, and it's just not as important to fantasy value as even predicting what the coaches think. You can have the most talented player in the world, and if he's only getting 3 targets a game or fewer than 10 touches as a running back or whatever, it just doesn't matter. Langford is a good example. Understanding, and maybe, you know, pride comes into this. We just want to hit on our guys, and I've been guilty of that. I think Justin Hunter is one of those guys, right, where he's been, and I think we've talked about him quite a bit, and I've rostered him a lot where, you know, you just want to hit on this guy and you feel like he's really, really talented. And I still feel like he's a really talented player. And he's probably not in the right offense. And maybe I'm just wrong on him in general, looking for certain metrics that I think are predictive, and I'm missing something there. But tons of biases like that that are related to having overconfidence in our ability to assess players and not placing enough weight in just how the team feels about it and how they fit into the scheme, which is arguably more important and certainly more important at specific positions.
So let's talk a little bit about baseball, and I'm just going to ask you some fundamental, you know, basic questions about it, because I mean, I've been struggling, Bales. You know, I've rostered Matt Harvey when he got shelled. I've rostered Scherzer in both of his first two starts. I've rostered Jose Hernandez when he started off real hot in the first five innings and he got just smashed in the sixth inning. You know, am I doing this wrong? I mean, it's, you know, is it a matter of like bankroll management? Like, I can't expect immediate success, and it's, you know, like it's a 162 game season, et cetera. You know, what do you look for when you're trying to select pitchers in a cash game type setting?
Yeah, so a lot of thoughts there. Overall, I think they're all related to sort of the variance of baseball. It's just such a unique sport. We talk about football as being high variance, and it is, but it's still sort of in the middle between a sport like NBA, which is very predictable night to night, and guys have very high floors. And then baseball is at the other end of the spectrum, comparable to maybe something like hockey, maybe more variance night to night. And pitchers are definitely more predictable than hitters, which are, it's just very, very difficult to predict hitter performance. But there's still a lot of volatility there. I mean, you might have a pitcher who is throwing really well and gives up a fly ball, and because the wind's blowing out 2 miles per hour faster than another night, it goes over the wall as opposed to the warning track, and, you know, it could be a grand slam versus a inning ending out. So there's just so much variance there. In regards to pitchers, it doesn't matter too much. Because of the volatility of baseball, I pretty much am looking for the same types of players in cash games and tournaments, no matter what. I'll perhaps weigh Vegas a little bit more for pitchers in cash games, but because of the fact that every baseball player has a low floor because of that volatility, I think that the sort of the upside and the risk are asymmetrical in a way that you always want to be looking for high upside plays, even in cash games. And so for batters, that might mean stacking in cash games when other people aren't, which is volatile, but you're going to have upside that overcompensates for that risk. For pitchers, it's strikeouts. You just always need high strikeout pitchers. If you have a guy, just because of the scoring on DraftKings or FanDuel, if you have a pitcher who just doesn't have high K upside, it's just not going to be worth the risk, which is high for every pitcher to roster a guy like that.
And so because of the volatility and because of the variance and because Mike Trout can go 0-for-5 and cost, you know, $5,000 on your salary cap, or because Scherzer can get rocked, or because Jose Fernandez can go five innings and then in the sixth inning get shelled, you know, do you think that baseball as a daily fantasy sport lends itself more to playing tournaments than playing double ups and cash games?
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. I think NBA is the ultimate cash game sport, and the top percentage of players are going to make a lot of the money in cash games because it's just something that you can model really well. Baseball, you can also model, but because of two things, the volatility and also the correlations via stacking. And in basketball, for example, everything good that happens for one player on a team, same thing with football, is typically bad for most of his teammates. You might have an assist in basketball, you might have we have stacking quarterback to receiver in football, but for the rest of the teammates, it's bad because it's a time sport. Baseball is not time. There's no theoretical ceiling on scoring. And so even a single by the number eight hitter is good for your 1-5 stack because it's just more likely that they're going to get RBI opportunities and just more likely that they're going to get more at bats.
So definitely looking at batting order for hitters. I mean, do you think that MLB as a daily fantasy sport, I mean, do you think it's almost silly to play cash games? I mean, should we just be playing tournaments? I mean, what do you think?
I think it depends on the slate, sort of. I think I play almost all tournaments, but there's times that I play cash games when I think that there's a reason for me to do that where I think I might have a particularly big edge in that format. For the most part, though, I do think it sets up to playing tournaments, and that's where the majority of my bankroll goes. And because of the randomness of it, I also think it lends itself to being very, very contrarian, way more so than even football, where you're just really, really focused on ownership percentages and getting guys who are going to give you sort of the biggest benefit when you hit on them. I think you could make an argument. So we've seen Bryce Harper last night. He was a bit lower, but before that, like every night at 40 or 50%, I don't think in any situation any batter should be in that percentage of lineups, and yet we still see it. It's just so difficult to predict batter performance that, to me, I'd rather not even try to compete with people in trying to predict it, and I'd rather just maximize the benefit when I'm right. And so when you have a batter who's in 3% of lineups who goes deep twice, that's a huge benefit to you, and not that big of a benefit when he's in half of lineups like Bryce Harper. So because of that, I just think it completely changes your strategy, and it does set up really well for GPPs.
Awesome. And, you know, I'm on Fantasy Labs, and I mean, I've really gotten into it since the end of the NFL season, you know, looking at NBA stuff. It's so, so helpful. It's when you really get the hang of it. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, I probably spend an hour and a half on there every day, and just, you guys have incredible statistics, and it's back tested to show, you know, what has worked, what worked in 2015, what has worked so far this season. So, you know, amazing job putting that together. You guys have like umpire data that will show, you know, what umpires favor hitters, what umpires favor pitchers. Could you mention a few more of the statistics that you guys have that maybe would be unique?
Yeah, sure. So I think that's a good example of things that I think are really important that are maybe what other people consider smaller that I'm talking about that have huge usable value to you as a player just because other people aren't factoring it in. So umpires are one. So we have basically a stat we call plus minus, which we use as a foundational stat, which is the points above or below expectation that a player has scored in the past in different situations. So we know that a 3K player on DraftKings won't score as much as a 5K player. And so we can sort of adjust for how many points they did score relative to what we'd expect historically. But that umpire data is a really good one that I think people don't use. We also have a bunch of new data with that comes from a company called Baseball Info Solutions that we worked with this year. And they provide data to 23 MLB teams. And it's really cool stuff that I think people are realizing is really important in regards to a lot of velocity data. So batted ball velocity, the average speed of the ball off of the bat, pitch velocity, fly ball, ground ball, line drive percentages, the average distance that a player is hitting the ball. And I think that these are really useful because they can help us quantify recent play in a way that we haven't been able to. There's so much randomness, as we've talked about, for batters. You know, you can hit five really hard line drives right at a guy, and you're really swinging the bat well, and that just won't be captured in traditional stats or even advanced stats like WOBA or ISO. But having that velocity data just really shows you who's throwing the ball well and who's hitting the ball well. And so you can sort of match up those differences in recent play versus long-term play and leverage that, I think, to create profitable lineups and to find both value and low ownership in tournaments.
Awesome. And just finishing off with an NFL question, how did you do during the 2015 NFL season? And are Fantasy Labs going to be offering anything new that we should be on the lookout for in 2016?
So for me personally as a player, worst season by far. It was not good. And I've been open about that. It was still profitable, but it was very close to break even. It wasn't good. But for Fantasy Labs, yeah, we have a whole bunch of really cool stuff on deck. We're already planning for NFL, and so because we launched in basically July last year, it's always been about building out these new sports really, really quickly. Like, we've had at times like a month to do these sports, and now we have all this time to plan. And so there's so many really cool things that I want to do. I don't know how much we're going to get to just because my list is so long, but I think uploading and then back testing your own projections or other sources' projections is on our list. Better back testing of your models and your lineups. You give us your lineup so we can sort of provide objective advice on those. Better correlations, so players on certain teams, you know, one gets injured, how does that affect the rest of the lineup? How has that offense, how have players in it traditionally sort of been correlated in terms of their production? A really big one for me is better quantifying offensive line play, because the line is so important. We know it's important for running backs. Figuring out how to quantify that, and related to that, something that I think we're going to be using is tracking data, so XY coordinates of every player, and using that to sort of figure out, you know, how long does it take a running back to typically get touched by the defense? How far is he going before he gets touched, and things like that. And then the last thing would be, I'm hoping it's something that we can get to this year, but potentially simulations. So we simulate games and then can project players off of that. And I'm really excited about that in the future, just because it will allow us to project a range of outcomes for each player. So if we simulate a game 10,000 times, we know that in this percent, this running back is going to score this many points, and in another percentage of games, he's going to have this ceiling or whatever. And I think that that range of outcomes is a better way to project players than a median sort of black and white approach.
Well, Jonathan, that was fantastic stuff. Really, really appreciate the time. And if you get that simulation going and the model, let me know, because there's no question that will help quite a bit in terms of projection. Thanks so much for coming aboard. And again, where can people check you out, whether it's social media or websites, one more time?
At Bales Football, and everything will be there.
Nice. Thanks, Jonathan.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Smart dude, Evan, without question. It's amazing to me the research and the metrics and the statistics that these folks put into these things. You guys can do that as well if you want, or you can just do it by the seat of your pants over at DraftKings.com. Whether you're golf's biggest fan or you're just ready to try a new fantasy sport, you can play one-week fantasy golf for free every week with my fellas over at DraftKings.com. Look, DraftKings.com, the bottom line in my mind is it makes every sport more interesting. Baseball, soccer, MMA, even golf. It makes it a lot more interesting if you've got actual golfers that you've got in your lineup and you're hoping that they'll win. Fantasy golf contests begin when tournaments tee off. So hurry to DraftKings.com now to choose your golfers and be sure to use promo code FEAST to play for free. That's promo code FEAST to play for free now only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
Ever wanted to ask an NFL player a question? Well, here's your chance. It's time to ask Ross.
Yeah, I mean, not really. We're not being asked a question here. It's more about introducing today's winner. And he is aggressive. I mean, he's the next contestant, the sixth contestant, Evan, if you're keeping track, in the Reality Sports Online League. And he calls himself the Crazy Canuck. His name's Todd. I don't even know if I'll say his last name if he wants me to. But Todd the Crazy Canuck on every email. And he's pretty crazy, dude. I mean, I lost track of how many sponsor confirmations that he sent me. But he wanted in badly. And so that's the people we want to reward, the people that won in the most. He's a 34-year-old married electrical engineer out of Montreal, Quebec, and recently the father of a now 8-month-old little boy. I've been playing fantasy in a couple of leagues a year for the past 12 years or so, usually one redraft in a long-running 3-to-5 player keeper league. Last year, he went a little MFL crazy in the offseason, played 12 of them, and followed the draft pretty closely. Looking for a new challenge in the fantasy football realm, and the RSO platform looks really sleek. I'm your man. Well, yes, you are, Todd. You are the man. Thank you for your dedication and how badly you wanted to be in it. You're in it. 4 more spots still available over the next 4 weeks. Would love, 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 love to have you guys in. All you need to do is give the Fantasy Feast and the College Draft podcasts an iTunes ranking and write a comment in there. Make sure you signed up to get the emails over at rostucker.com, my personal emails that I send out about once a month. And then send a sponsor confirmation or two. And then you get a great chance to be golden. You send the more, I mean, the reality is the more of these sponsor confirmations you send in, probably the better shot you have. And that's just me telling you the truth, because that seems like a pretty fair way to do it. Other than that, stick a fork in us. I'm full and I'm done.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
So I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for a while now because it's awesome. I mean, everything about the experience is top-notch. But what's really cool that a lot of people don't know is they do used cars as well. I mean, there's over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. So you can get the same awesome experience connecting with a local certified dealer or using the TrueCar website, the TrueCar app, checking out the TrueCar pricing curve, which I love, which shows you the high end, the low end, and where most people are buying similar vehicles, all for pre-owned cars in addition to new cars. TrueCar users save an average of just about $3,300 off the MSRP, which is awesome. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, make sure you visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.